This is the Outsource Accelerator Podcast, exploring business and outsourcing mastery. Let's do it. Welcome to another episode of the Outsource Accelerator Podcast. My name, as always, is Derek Gallimore, and this is episode number 122. Today, I am joined by Neville Samuels again. He first joined us in episode 119. So if you haven't heard that, go back and listen to that episode because it introduces Neville and his business background and how he became involved in outsourcing. As always, this is an independent episode and you'll get a lot from this one anyway. Today, we discuss Neville's company, which is Virtual Staff 365, and I dig under the bonnet a little bit, under the covers, and see what it's all about and see how he helps people and see what he believes is the best approach to outsourcing. So there's a lot of value here for you, I'm sure. If you want to get any of the show notes or get in touch with Neville, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/122 and enjoy. Hi and welcome back, everybody. Today, I'm lucky again to be joined by Neville Samuels. Hi, Neville.
Hi, Derek. Hello, listeners. Great to be here.
Today, we spoke to Neville previously in a previous episode, and we kind of looked into his background. He's a qualified accountant, and he's had a number of successful businesses now, and now running Virtual Staff 365. So I want to hear more from Neville today about Virtual Staff 365. And this isn't because it's an infomercial or anything, but I really think that the more businesses surrounding outsourcing and feeding into outsourcing will really help the proliferation of outsourcing. And certainly Neville with Virtual Staff 365 plays an important and critical role in that. So thank you for joining us, Neville. And would you, I suppose, just want to give us a brief introduction to yourself and your company?
Sure. I'm the founder of Virtual Staff 365, which, as the name suggests, we help businesses recruit, onboard, and retain virtual assistants, usually based in the Philippines, and usually they work from home. When someone asks me what I do, I say I help businesses get their time back so they can work on the things that'll make their business grow if that's what they want to be doing.
Right. And when I'm really interested in the initial stepping stones, I want everyone to start outsourcing or try outsourcing. What is the difference between you and a BPO and some of the other services out there?
Right. Okay. So, the real difference between us and a BPO is we don't have any set premises in any particular area in the Philippines or anywhere else. Our staff work from home. Usually we draw on the pool of candidates or the pool of outsourced workers that have been working in BPOs, which are essentially offices, outsourced offices with infrastructure. A lot of the candidates that we recruit or that apply for jobs with us come out of that industry, and they might have been in that industry. Typically, I see it between anywhere between 3 and 10 years, and they're tired of the travel, to be honest. A lot of them are tired of travel in and out of Manila, 2 to 3 hours in one direction. They love working in the outsourcing industry, but they just want to work from home and spend more time with their family. Now, the offering's very different because when someone's working from home, you don't necessarily get the same visibility as you do when someone's working in an office, when you know that they're accountable to everyone in that office. So what we do is we bring that accountability. We provide the visibility to our clients so they can actually see what their staff are doing when their staff are working from home. So, and I suppose the obvious question is, why do people use virtual staff working from home? Well, the obvious thing is it's cheaper. Mm. So you're getting the same resource. Often you're getting highly skilled, highly talented resources. It's not as expensive as staff working in a BPO. And with that, there are pros and cons.
What are some of the pros and cons? So people working from home, it's a huge amount cheaper, really, isn't it? Because it's almost double a salary if you want to go into a BPO. But with the BPO, you effectively get, you know, all of the premises, the infrastructure, a lot of HR support services, obviously fast internet, and a bit of a kind of culture and environment for the people to feel comfortable in. But it almost doubles the cost of the person, doesn't it?
Well, the one thing is the cost. That's right. It does increase the cost significantly. The real difference at the end of the day for the client, it's very hard for the, to be honest, I think it's very hard for the client to tell the difference between the two, especially if it's an introduction to outsourcing for them. What I do see is my clients, if they grow, once they start with their first VA, and then they take on another, and then another, over a period of time, they might get to the point where we might suggest to them that they maybe start looking at using a BPO.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, while this is definitely cheaper, it's harder to manage four or five people working in different places than it is if they're all in one office.
And how do you handle that transition then? Because I, you know, preach to SMEs that they really want to look at the strategy pretty hard before they start, because if you start working with virtual staff or remote workers, then it could be hard to aggregate them into an office if you want to later.
Well, they won't move.
Right.
Once they work from home, they're not going to move. And we've actually had this, we've had the scenario and we've got it right now. The staff won't move from home because they really enjoy it. It gives them time with their family. They work a 9-hour day, 8 hours paid and 1 hour of breaks.
Right.
And I've got guys that are telling me they want to work for me because they're currently working a 9-hour day in Manila with 3 hours travel each way. Mm. It's a 15-hour day.
Sure.
And they're not necessarily getting paid more. In fact, often we pay more because we don't provide a lot of the benefits that are provided by the BPO. The transition is generally when we'll sit down with a client and say, I think it's time you look at paying a little bit more and having a team work together. There are two reasons why we suggest a BPO. The one is teamwork and the other is data security.
Mm.
When someone's working from home, we can't provide any level of data security. And we'd never suggest that we can.
Do you think you get higher productivity if people are sitting in an office? Do you really think that people do work hard when they're sitting at home? They're not distracted. They maybe don't sleep in a little bit.
I've actually seen results where people working in a BPO are less productive because of the people around them.
Right.
So the more people around, and that's just anecdotal. It's not scientific. What we are able to do is we're actually able to provide our clients with a certain amount of visibility of what their staff are doing. So we use software tools that allow the client to get timesheets that tell them exactly when the staff log in, when they log out, when they have breaks, screenshots of what the staff are doing, very similar to what you might see on some of these online freelancer systems. Mm. And sometimes when someone comes to me and they want someone for 2 hours work, I say, go to Freelancer, go to Odesk, Upwork, whatever it's called, and do it that way. And it's a bit of a struggle because you're dealing with 150 resumes from 100 different countries. And The working relationship's a little bit different. With us, our clients have direct access to the staff. They're dealing with them throughout the day. They can see the screenshots of what's happening. Usually, our clients are blown away with what they're able to achieve using VAs working from home. And then we also work with BPOs. So if a client comes to us and says to us, Neville, we need help with but we need a BPO, or they're some of the – I've actually got a client that's already in a BPO. He's got a team working in a BPO, and the team are not happy. And he's come to me to say, can you help us find the right BPO?
Right.
And that's maybe where Accelerator comes in as well.
And if people start with remote staffing or virtual and they want to transition into a BPO, is it generally that you have to start again? You shed the staff and you know,
find new staff? Usually usually they don't shed the staff. They keep the staff and they start building a new team in a VPO.
Right. Okay.
Sometimes they can't stomach the cost. They don't actually see the value in the cost. And they'll say, you know what, Neville, we'll just work the way we are working because they see it's cheaper and it is working.
Right. Do you see, what is the success rates you see with, because you're at the very entry point of people's outsourcing journey, which I find super exciting. But I also find that if anything goes wrong, you know, if they maybe have someone that isn't as enthusiastic or capable as they had hoped, then, you know, instead of just finding someone new, they kind of blame it on the whole concept of outsourcing. They blame it on the Philippines, and they kind of throw the whole baby out with the bathwater. What sort of success, and that's why I find it so critical that people, new people to outsourcing, have early wins, and it's also super critical that their first staff member is super capable, because otherwise they can just become despondent so quick. But what is your sort of success and failure rate like?
Well, that's a really good question, because I've been working with my own VAs since 2009, when someone comes to me and I can detect that in actual fact, it's not going to be successful, I actually tell the client straight up, I don't think this is going to work. And it usually comes around, there are two reasons why I find it doesn't work in the initial phases. Either we've recruited the wrong person or the client isn't able to train them. Now, in terms of recruiting the wrong person, we don't provide the client with one possible candidate. In some cases, we'll provide six or seven candidates. The client interviews, the client makes the selection. So we actually take a lot of the guesswork out of it. Mm. We do a fair amount of testing if we can to actually validate the person's skills and make sure that they can actually do what they say they can do. And the client sees that. The client's involved in setting up the challenge. We do a simulation or a challenge or a little test, whatever it might be. So to be honest, we've been really successful on that front. Where we get let down is when the clients can't spend the time training their staff member. And probably the most recent one was about 4 months ago, where a client took on a VA and they discovered that every day they were asking the person to do something different, they'd have to train them on the something different. There was no repetition of the work that was being done. So they could never say to her, please do what you did yesterday, because the tasks were different.
Hmm.
And that doesn't work. So
because there's no scalability in that, is there? You need, there's efficiency then when things are repetitive, because you teach it once and it gets done ad infinitum. But if you're having to sit by someone, although I imagine, I mean, there's only an extent of tasks that this person would ever do. So maybe it might take 6 months as opposed to 6 days, but it's,
Well, you haven't got that time. The client turned around and said, we're actually not as ready as we thought we were.
Mm.
We need someone, but they probably need to be in the office. It's just too hard. So that does happen. We do try and weed it out before it starts. We had one client call us up saying they'd like us to find them a VA because they're on the road all the time, every day. And I said, well, when are you going to train them? And they said, no, we want the person to hit the ground running.
Mm.
And that is when the red flag goes up. If you want someone to hit the ground running and they sitting 6,000 kilometers away from you, it's not going to work.
No. And equally, I mean, people have expectations of VAs and even any offshore staffing. And I think they kind of have expectations that are just unreal for any kind of employment scenario. You know, if you hire someone new sitting in your office in your hometown, you've got to spend time with them. They've got to,
yes,
you know, you've got to ingratiate them to your company culture and your processes.
I actually think that's our number one challenge. Our challenge is to educate our clients that taking on a VA or having a remote worker work in your business doesn't mean that they can do everything. And doesn't mean that when you explain something to them, they understand it. Very often, they'll nod and say yes, because they're actually saying is, I hear you, I'm listening to you, But it doesn't mean that they actually understood everything you said or the repercussions of what you're saying.
Sure.
And I do say that's our number one challenge because we have it all the time. And what I say to my clients is you can't just talk to them and expect them to acknowledge and then go and do the task. You've actually got to get them to do it in bite-sized chunks.
Yeah.
So, and I learned this in our previous business, in our e-commerce business. My business partner would say to me, Neville, I asked L. Bell, who was one of the VAs, to do whatever today. And I told him how to do it. And he said he understood it. And he completely stuffed it up. A whole day's work's completely gone. And he's messed up everything. And I'd say to my partner, his name is David, I'd say to him, did you ever have a look at the work that L. Bell was doing to see that he was doing it correctly? And he'd say to me, no. I told him what to do, and he said he understood it.
Yeah.
So at no point in time did my partner actually say to him, stop and show me what you've done.
Yeah, milestones, yeah.
Okay. Little milestones. And I call it bite-sized chunks. So what I say to all my clients is when you give your staff something to do, tell them to do it once and to stop and send it back to you or stop and let you have a look at it and then not to go and do it a second time until you've had a look at it and approved it. Because if they haven't understood it, you'll pick it up in the first one. And if they get that right, then go and do five. Then they've got to stop and show you what the five look like. And once they've done the five, and then you're good with that, then go and do 10. And so you build it up because what you're doing at the same time is you're building up their confidence in the work that they're doing for you. And if they know they're doing a good job for you, they're going to be more engaged and they're going to be more willing to do a good job for you tomorrow.
Sure.
So it is a process, and it's a process of education with our clients. And I'd like to think that most of the time we get it right, not always. Some jobs are just harder than that. Some jobs are not simple data entry.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the complexity increases with the complexity. It almost kind of gets exponentially complex, doesn't it, as complexity or variation rises. But this is, it's interesting that you kind of dwell on this, that a lot of the essence in success is not actually onboarding the virtual remote staff because they're super used to this whole thing, but it's kind of the onboarding and the coaching and the training of the employer, isn't it? Because they actually just have to they need to approach this differently to a normal employee environment, and there's a few tricks they have to learn and there's a few processes. So, in our activation consultation, we also spend time with the business owner and emphasize that it actually requires a bit of learning from you, to so that you can optimize this experience and get the best out of your team. It's not going to happen unless you invest time and effort and processes them.
And companies like Telstra, well, they've got teams that can actually do that. They've got the resources. But I'm not shy to tell a client that if they haven't got the time to train or if they haven't got staff that can be accountable for the training of their offshore staff, then it's just not going to work.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So getting back to your original question, it is critical that we recruit the right people or give our clients the right choice of candidates. And that's really what we do, and we do a great job of that. Even if I say so myself, and we've certainly made mistakes, but by and large we do get that right, and we have a process of weeding people out, and the process doesn't start with me; it actually starts with my staff in the Philippines. So you've got to have processes to actually do that, and a lot of VAs actually or candidates fall by the wayside because we go through a process of interviews and a process of testing. And then we put them forward to clients. And very often, I have a colleague who's got his own team in the Philippines, and he says, Neville, for every five people that we give an interview to, I'm lucky if one comes to the interview.
Mm-hmm.
He just doesn't have those processes. So that is important.
Yeah, there is a bit of a sort of flake environment, isn't there, in the Philippines? And this is where I think you're, without even trying, you're demonstrating your immense value to potential clients, because it's not just, I don't know, find a virtual staff. It's actually sort of all of the inherent business experience that you have, but also the kind of hands-on and real-life experience you have in running outsourced teams, but then also your filtering processes when finding suitable candidates, and also the kind of the guidance that you're actually giving the clients, like kind of pushing them down the right path, and so that they're following the processes, so that they're getting the results that they expect. And this is why I think there's huge value in the partnerships within outsourcing. So there's you as a sort of brokerage virtual staff finder, but also in the BPOs, because just generally it's not just about putting bums on seats. It's actually the immense kind of business knowledge that comes with these partnerships. Yeah. Can you
That's right.
can you give us an overview of your costs, how you charge, like what is the pricing structure, and also maybe an indication of what it costs for people to get started with a VA?
Right. So we don't have any setup fees or recruitment costs or any upfront fees. Essentially, what we do when we present a range of candidates to our clients, we include the hourly cost. And someone's hourly cost might be as little as $6 an hour. If we just take an average of $10 an hour, if the VA works a 40-hour week, which is full time, it's $400 a week. You times that by 52 weeks divided by 12, there's your monthly cost of about 170, 1,700 per month. That's just someone at $10. Someone at $6 is 40% cheaper, significantly cheaper. It just depends on the candidate, the candidate's experience, and the candidate's salary requirements. So we just charge an hourly rate.
Right, and
And then
that's then all encompassed with your software support, and obviously your kind of
that's right.
oversight and the full-time employment of the staff.
Correct.
Do you do
Correct.
partial staffing? Do you do 20
We
hours a
do.
week?
Yeah, we do. We do 20 hours a week. The cost is a little bit higher. So we actually have a differential between full time and part time. And that cost is around $3 per hour. The difficulty with part time is that we've lost great quality VAs that have got full time work elsewhere. And they always want full time work. So if they can only get part time with you, they'll take it. As soon as they get full time, they're gone. Or what we know they do is they'll keep this part-time job and they'll go get another full-time job as a VA,
Yeah,
and
that's what I
they'll end up
find
working.
commonly. There's
Yeah,
a lot
they'll
of
work
moonlighting here,
14
isn't there,
hours.
which
That's right.
has a bit of a downside. Okay,
So,
and are there minimum contracts? Like, what's the general expectation?
generally, in the first 6 months, there's a 24-hour notice period. So while we don't have fixed contracts, a client can start with us, and if they're not happy within 2 weeks, they can say it's not working. I've had a client do that, but then they said, never go out and find someone else that's better for us. But a client can cancel at any time. In the first 6 months, there's a 24-hour notice period. After the first 6 months, it becomes a 2-week notice period. So although there are no fixed costs, no fixed terms, what people need to remember is that the investment is not the cost. If you're spending $1,200 or $1,000 for a VA, that's not the real cost of the VA. The real cost of the VA is the client's time in to invest to train that VA.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the sunk time, isn't it?
That's right. So because of that, no, well, firstly, it also takes us 2 to 3 weeks just to recruit good quality candidates. So it's not like I've got someone available this afternoon for you. We have to go through a recruitment process to find the right candidates for each role, because every role is different. So with that in mind, it generally a VA doesn't start in the first month from the time you speak to a client. It takes 2 to 3 or 3 to 4 weeks. Then there's a lot of time invested in training the VA. Excuse me. So clients might persist a little bit, but if it's not working, we say hire slow, fire fast. get someone else in rather than persist with the wrong person.
Yeah, you've got to get those early wins, haven't you? I think otherwise people can become a little bit despondent.
Well, often I say to people, how long do you think it's going to take you to work out if the person's right or not? Usually the standard answer is 2 to 3 months. I know it's 2 weeks.
Mm, absolutely.
So, and often you know it within 3 days. Because if you show them how to do something on day one, and day two you're asking them to do the same thing, by day three you don't even have to ask them, they know what they have to do. So it's actually much quicker than 2 to 3 months, but for some clients it might be.
And again, I think there's a lot of factors, isn't there? It depends on how much business experience and employment experience the actual client has as well. You know, there's a whole kind of spectrum of people starting on this outsourcing journey, isn't it?
That's right.
Fantastic. And thank you so much. I mean, it just sort of demonstrates your incredible business insight and outsourcing insight and the value of your services as a direct result of all that. How can people get in touch with you, Neville, if they're inclined?
Look, I'm just really happy for people to pick up the phone and call me. I like chatting to people. So if someone wants to give me a call, my number, 0402-116606. I'm in Melbourne. Always available for a coffee or a chat.
Fantastic.
They can always email me, go to my website, which is virtualstaff365.com.au. But any way people want to get hold of me, that's fine.
Absolutely.
Great to see you, Derek. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Neville. And all of that is in the show notes. And we will thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
So that was Neville Samuels of Virtual Staff 365. I hope you enjoyed that and learned a lot. He obviously has a lot of business experience in his head there, and obviously outsourcing experience as well. If you want to get in touch with Neville, go to our show notes. That is at outsourceaccelerator/122. And of course, if you want to ask us anything or get in touch, then please just email us at ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.